only fast from what is jurisprudentially dedicated, but also observe an ethical fasting too. Such noble fasters let their eyes, ears, and all other body parts fast against whatever which is regarded in religion as haram. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, "When you fast, let your ears, your eyes, your hair, your skin, and all of your body parts fast too. Do not let your fasting days be the same as those of non-fasting days." So, you should know that Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh, as a great mystic of his time, was very sensitive to the spiritual effects of good and bad conducts, and that is why he is warning people about committing sins in the month of Ramadan, and in fact, he is encouraging us to leave those habits. He looked at this month as a great opportunity to practice spiritual elevation and make use of such progress through the whole days of the year.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Please stay with us. Today's tip: what is the true source of joy and how is it related to our ubudiyya, our service, our worship, and our obedience to Allah? So, dear friends, we are humbly speaking to you all, and we are at your humble service in this holiest of holy months, this holy month of Ramadan, this beautiful month in which the Holy Quran was revealed, this beautiful month in which the divine blessings, the divine mercy, and the divine pardon of the Almighty Allah is at the service of every single one of us. It is up to us to be able to take this opportunity and to accept this invitation to the banquet of Allah, the banquet of mercy and forgiveness and blessings. Now, one of the things, of course, in this holy month, which is very important, and of course, which we have learned via this holy month, is this idea of what is the true source of joy, or in reality, what is true joy and true happiness and true pleasure. Now, one of the reasons that the divine messengers of Allah, which according to some traditions numbered 124,000 over the span of years, of course, starting with Prophet Adam, known as Adam, alayhi salam, and ending with the seal of prophethood and the perfection of humanity, the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Now, one of the things that these prophets and these divine books have taught us is what is the true source of joy and pleasure and happiness. Now, unlike what is prevalent in the society nowadays and for quite some time now, a few decades, the idea that material things and material wealth or this kind of status, political or social, is what brings us true joy and is the source of joy and pleasure. When in reality, the divine messengers have come and they have taught us that this materialistic world is just a mirage. It is a transient place from which we must cross. And so why should we collect all of these material things which we cannot take with us? And the divine messengers have taught us that the true source of joy and the true source of pleasure and the true bliss and the true delight is, of course, in the service and worship and obedience to the Almighty Allah. It is in the ubudiyya of the Almighty Allah. Now, why is it that sometimes we don't feel that way? We don't feel like ubudiyya is the true source of joy and pleasure and satisfaction and contentment? Well, it is because either or both that we are not conducting the ubudiyya as it should. And usually that is pretty much what is happening, is either we're not serious in our ubudiyya, or we are not sincere in our ubudiyya, or we are not pure in our ubudiyya, or our intentions are not correct in the ubudiyya. And so all of these different aspects, they play a factor. And, you know, these things, if they're not done 100%, so for example, we have 10% sincerity, we have 5% purity, we have 15% dedication, and we have 1% motivation when it comes to our ubudiyya, then how do we expect this ubudiyya to give us 100% joy and pleasure and delight? So these two kind of go hand in hand, right? It's almost like investment. If you invest, for example, 10 toman in something, you can't expect a return of 20 toman. That doesn't make sense. Whatever your return is going to be in proportion to what you invested, right? So here, whatever we invest in our ubudiyya, in return, our ubudiyya will give that to us. Yes, there is kind of a beautiful blessing that the Almighty Allah has told us, and that is that if you take one step towards the Almighty Allah, then He in return will take 10 steps towards you. And in this holy month of Ramadan, we could very well say that if you take one step towards the Almighty Allah in this holy month of Ramadan, the Almighty Allah will take 10,000 steps towards you. شربنا على ذكري حبيبي مدامتا ساكرنا بها من قال لأن يخلق الكرم
IRIB English Radio.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Asad Jafari.
A look at this idea of fear and grief in the Quran. It's two emotions that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentions a lot in the Quran. Some of the greatest people in history having moments of stress and anxiety. It's okay to be stressed. It's okay to feel anxious. It doesn't mean that you're not relying on Allah or you're ungrateful towards Allah. It doesn't mean that at all. The other example is Bibi Maryam, another one of the four great women. And this one short verse really, to me, was a huge moment of reflection. She's now pregnant with Nabi Isa, about to deliver him. The pains and the contractions and the pains of delivery is so severe that in the Quran, there's a verse in Surah Maryam itself where she says, Ya laytani mittu qabla hadha. She says, woe unto me, ya laytani, oh my God. Like, she just feels sorry for herself. If only I had died before this happened. If only I had died before, meaning before the pain of this pregnancy, if only I was dead. Now sometimes, you know, mothers-to-be, when they go into, you know, labor pains, I mean, you know, it's a severe pain that as a male I could never understand. And sometimes I've seen it with my own eyes, that if they say too much, if they complain too much, then they're right away told by the people around them that, look, don't be ungrateful, this is a gift from Allah, a blessing from Allah, this and that. And meanwhile, she's asked to kind of, you know, quiet down. Here is Bibi Maryam, one of the four greatest women, the only woman by name mentioned in the Quran. And Allah now, fine, it happened in history. Let's say she even uttered those words. For Allah now to place that inside of His Quran as one of the 6,000 plus verses is a lesson for us, especially for my sisters. It's okay to feel that level of pain. Does it make you part of the unfaithful ones? Does it mean that you're ungrateful for the blessing that's about to be delivered to you? No. It just means that you're a human being. It just means that you feel pain. It just means that this is a very difficult process to go through. But for Allah now to record this and to narrate this in His Quran through the likes of Bibi Maryam, to me, I thought was very profound. Again, I just in the beginning, just want to reiterate the fact that it's okay to feel these emotions. It's okay to go through these moments. The greatest women before you, the greatest people before you had gone through the same thing. Look at Nabi Yunus, for example. Nabi Yunus, a great prophet of God. In the belly of the whale, in that darkness, right, that we recite in Salat al-Ghufela. There was anger, he was upset, he was frustrated with his people. They wouldn't listen to anything that he was saying. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted him to do what? To go back and be a little bit more patient. His tariqi awla was what? That he left his people too soon. Allah says, look, you need some time to think about this. But you can sense the emotion of Nabi Yunus. In this verse, as it talks about the ghadab of Yunus, the anger of Yunus, that emotion of Yunus, that anger or that anxiety, that stress that, oh my God, they're not listening to what I'm saying. It took a little bit of Allah to say, look, spend some time in this darkness in the belly of the whale. Understand what's going on. You'll come to a conclusion. And so the Quran says, فَنَادَى فِي الظُّلُمَاتِ أَنْ لَا إِلَٰهَ إِلَّا أَنْتَ سُبْحَانَكَ إِنِّي كُنْتُ مِنَ الظَّالِمِينَ. Right? In that darkness, he cries out after restoring a little bit of his emotions now and controlling his anger. He says that there, glory be to you, Allah. There's no power but you. Inni kuntum min al-zalimin. I'm the one that made that mistake. It took a little bit of a break, a little bit of an escape, a little bit of seclusion, isolation from the people for him to come to that realization. But here, the emotion that the Quran refers to is the ghadab and the anger of Nabi Yunus. Meaning, again, a prophet of Allah. All of this is just to tell all of you and myself that these feelings, you know, are not only for those who challenge God, who complain to God. No, of course not. Of course not. So it's okay to feel these emotions. يا حنان يا منان يا ذا الجود والإحسان ثبت قلبي على الإيمان نرجو عفوك والغفران اللهم اجعلنا من عتقاء شهر رمضان
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Now, in continuation, of course, as you remember, we were talking about the true source of joy and the true source of pleasure and satisfaction and contentment. Of course, we had said that the divine messengers of Allah, peace and blessings upon them, have been sent down in order to guide us and take us towards salvation and prosperity. And of course, this prosperity is in ubudiyya. Of course, we had also said a little bit in the previous segment how this ubudiyya is the true source of joy and pleasure, as the Holy Quran says that the purpose of the creation of humanity, or humanity was created for ubudiyya, meaning that it is in our innate nature to be the abd and the servant and at the service of the Almighty Allah. Now, because it is in the innate nature of a human being to be an abd, what happens is that shaitan, Satan, and his followers, they try to pull a human being towards the ubudiyya of non-Allah. So, for example, and this is the best way to make people go astray, and this is what they do. For example, an individual who because every human being has this innate nature of being an abd, because the Almighty Allah has created a human being with the innate nature of wanting to worship and wanting to be at the service of. Now, of course, the divine messengers were sent in order to explain to us and remind us and let us know that this innate nature that you have for ubudiyya, it is for the ubudiyya of the Almighty Allah. And once people listen to this reminder, and it is interesting that the Quran has also been called a reminder, this reminder again takes us back towards the ubudiyya of the Almighty Allah. But the forces of Satan and Shaitan, they try to take us towards the ubudiyya and the service and the servitude of other than the Almighty Allah. Whether it is our carnal desires, whether it is our whims, our fancies, whether it is other people, idols, superstars, celebrities, or whether it is money and wealth or social status, or whether it is women or it is other people. And so this is what they try to do in order to deviate us. But the divine messengers were sent in order to tell us that the true source of joy and the true source of pleasure, of course, is only and only in the ubudiyya of the Almighty Allah.
With hope in our eyes, we search through the skies, waiting for our old friend. With loved ones nearby and our spirits high, a blessed time we'll spend in both love and in fear to Allah.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
In the limelight.
For 20 years, Tim Bush has escaped prosecution for their war crimes in Iraq. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Truthout, Iraqis mark the 20th anniversary of the horrific US-UK bombing of Baghdad, dubbed shock and awe. In rapid succession, coalition forces dropped 3,000 bombs, including many that weighed 2,000 pounds, on Baghdad in what the New York Times called almost biblical power. Although they launched an illegal war of aggression and committed war crimes in Iraq, 20 years later, the leaders of the US and the UK have never faced criminal accountability. It what came to be called Operation Iraqi Freedom. 173,000 troops from the United States and the UK invaded Iraq. During the 8-year war, about 300,000 Iraqis and 4,600 Americans were killed. The United States spent $815 billion on the war, not counting indirect cost. It plunged the country into a war, and millions of Iraqi refugees remain displaced. 2 decades later, not one of the officials responsible has been brought to justice. Sources within his administration have confirmed that George W. Bush was planning to invade Iraq, an executive regime change long before the September 11, 2001 attacks. The US-led invasion violated the United Nations Charter, which authorizes countries to use military force against other countries only in self-defense or with approval by the UN Security Council. The attack on Iraq didn't satisfy either of these conditions and was therefore an act of aggression. Like other U.S. military interventions, the rationale for this illegal aggression was based on a lie, much as President Lyndon B. Johnson used the fabricated Tonkin Gulf incident as a pretext to escalate the Vietnam War. Bush relied on mythical weapons of mass destruction and a non-existent link between Iraqi president and 9/11 attacks to justify his war on Iraq. Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice falsely warned that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, WMDs, and Rice invoked the image of a mushroom cloud to justify the impending invasion of Iraq. Secretary of State Colin Powell shamefully presented false information about Iraq having WMD to the UN Security Council in February 2003. In 2001, former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter confirmed that Iraq had destroyed 90-95% of its WMD and there was no evidence that it had retained the other 5-10%, which didn't necessarily constitute a threat or even a weapons program. Indeed, no WMD were ever found by the UN Weapons Inspectors before or after Bush's invasion of Iraq. Moreover, the Bush administration fabricated a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, notwithstanding the intelligence to the contrary. The Downing Street Minutes, a transcript of one of Prime Minister Tony Blair's briefings with British intelligence that the Times of London published in 2005, demonstrated that the Bush administration had decided by July 2002 to invade Iraq and carry out regime change. The intelligence and facts were being fixed around the policy, the minutes revealed. Even a 2005 congressional report prepared at the direction of former Representative John Conyers, Jr., concluded that, in spite of intelligence information to the contrary, members of the Bush administration made false statements before the invasion about Iraq having WMD and linkages between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Although Tim Bush urged the UN Security Council to pass a resolution authorizing its attacks on Iraq, The council refused. Bush and his allies instead cobbled together prior council resolutions, none of which, individually or collectively, authorized the invasion of Iraq. Bush justified the attack with his doctrine of preemptive war. But the UN Charter only allows a country to use military force in response to an armed attack by another country, or with permission of the Security Council. Operation Iraqi Freedom violated the UN Charter and constituted an illegal war of aggression. U.S. forces committed many other war crimes in Iraq, including extrajudicial killings, torture, and the targeting of civilians, which are prohibited by the Geneva Conventions, the Convention Against Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, and Degrading Treatment or Punishment, and the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Torture and abuse conducted at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq included the stacking of naked prisoners on one another, photographing prisoners who had been forcibly arranged in explicit positions, keeping prisoners naked for days, forcing male prisoners to wear women's clothes, using snarling dogs, punching, slapping and kicking prisoners, and other things. Civilians were targeted as U.S. troops operated under rules of engagement that directed them to shoot everything that moved. In these free-fire zones, the U.S. also bombed civilian areas and used cluster bombs, depleted uranium and white phosphorus, resulting in massive civilian casualties. The most notorious free zone was in Fallujah. In April 2004, U.S. forces attacked the village and killed 736 people, at least 60% of whom were women and children. In another attack the following November, the U.S. troops killed between 581 and 670 civilians in Fallujah. Another infamous example of extrajudicial killing was the Haditha massacre in November 2005, when U.S. Marines killed 24 unarmed civilians, execution style, in a 3 to 4 hour rampage. The U.S. covered up the massacre until Time magazine ran a story about it in March 2006. Documented extrajudicial killings also took place in the Iraqi cities of Al-Ghaim, Tal al-Jal, Mukarradib, Mahmudiya, Al-Hamdaniya, Samarra, Salahuddin, and Ishaqi. These war crimes are not only abhorrent but punishable under the U.S. War Crimes Act and the U.S. Torture Statute. Yet, although it has been 20 years since the invasion of Iraq, no U.S. leader have been indicted. The Obama administration's Department of Justice actively decided not to prosecute anyone for the torture and abuse committed during the Bush regime. Yet it only took 1 year for the ICC to charge other countries with war crimes. Last May, George W. Bush accidentally admitted that his decision to invade Iraq was unjustified. While addressing a crowd at the Bush Presidential Center in Dallas, Bush decried the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. He then added, under his breath, Iraq too. Meanwhile, according to Axios, 2 decades after the U.S. invaded Iraq, 61% of Americans do not believe the U.S. made the right decision, according to a new Axios Ipsos poll. The chaos and destruction that followed the invasion have made a generation of Americans and their leaders more skeptical of the use of military force overseas, in particular in the West Asia region. The invasion toppled a brutal dictator, but sparked 20 years of instability in Iraq and damaged America's standing in the world.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
This is A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson: refraining from argument in the month of Ramadan. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. Hello, dear brothers and listeners. Salamun alaikum. I'm Farhad, your host. These days are great days, and I wish we can make an excellent use of them. So, today, we are going to talk about another moral conditions for acceptance of our fasting, our worship in this great month, by Allah, inshallah. So, let's go to our topic. We promised to talk about one moral action in every session. So, in accordance to our topic, today we will learn another moral condition of acceptance of our good deeds in the feast of Allah, in this great, let's say, festival. One of those moral conditions that we have been given an admonishment, a very serious admonishment to commit, is that we must keep away from involving in it, is something that we know as jadal in Arabic terminology, or controversy, or argument, in order to prove our position and defeat the opponent, not proving the truth. So the argument which we are received an admonishment to commit it, is an argument that we are going to prove our position and defeat the opponent, not just proving the truth and showing the truth. In this case, it has ruining effect on our soul and destroys the faith in our hearts. And sometimes, in my point of view, the side effects become more serious. One of these traits that can surface on our hearts is arrogance. And this trait is the very same one that led to Satan being cast out of heaven. So it's important to know the limit of controversy and argument and control ourselves and try and practice to refrain from it.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin-nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z on Islamic Lifestyle. I'm Farhad, and you're listening to the moral conditions of fasting. Okay, we talked about controversy and argument, and we said the controversy and argument is forbidden if it is for proving our position and overcome the opponent, not just for proving the truth. And we also understood that controversy and argument, in this case, makes arrogance blossom in our heart. And we know that this is one of the greatest sins in Islamic faith. So if we want to understand the meaning of arrogance in Islam, we can simply say that a proud person is the one who thinks himself to be the best and wants others to know that he is the best. I hope Allah protect us from this very great sin, and I wish you the best. Thank you for being with us. I wish you the best, and I hope me, myself, and you as well, my brothers and sisters, to make an excellent use of this great opportunity, this great month, the month of Ramadan. Thank you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
But I know that you are really loving, you are really caring. I can't realize, but you know that I will be better, that I will be stronger if you are by my side.
Allah. In the limelight.
While Ukraine is devastated by war and Europe is caught in an economic crisis, the United States is making a lot of profit from selling weapons to Ukraine. However, the majority of the American people are against the financial and military support of the Biden administration for Kiev. We've taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. English website of Al Mayadeen Television Network has covered this story and tells us more. Thousands of anti-war demonstrators took to the streets of Washington on Sunday, 19th of February, against the U.S. government's warmongering policies, urging the Biden administration to stop supplying arms to Ukraine and to disband the NATO military alliance. The biggest demonstration was held at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., a symbolically significant venue for American political activists as people participated in the Rage Against the War Machine national rally. The protesters at the rally, who held anti-war placards, called for peace talks between Russia and Ukraine and an end to U.S. funding of military aid to Kiev. They also called for diverting the Pentagon budget to fund numerous domestic needs. The anti-war protesters also demanded the dissolution of the NATO military alliance, blaming NATO for horrors of war in much of the world. Nick Branagh of the People's Party and Angela McArdle of the Libertarian Party, who moderated the national rally, described the event as an opportunity by the organizers and the speakers from across the political spectrum of the United States to bring together the left and the right and end the war in Ukraine. Pacifist journalist and author Chris Hedges delivered one of the keynote speeches at the event. The Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, who was a foreign correspondent for 15 years for the New York Times, where he served as West Asia Bureau Chief and Balkan Bureau Chief for the New York Times, set the platform for the notable left-right speakers who would follow up in the national gathering. veteran U.S. congressman and former presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party, Ron Paul, was one of the speakers who spoke at the rally, stating that a simple way to stop the war was to end the Fed and to not send people to war unless they vote for it. Former U.S. congresswoman and presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard, who spoke, reminding the crowd of what caused her to run in 2020 and how there was no other candidate willing to talk about the dangers where this new Cold War and nuclear arms race would lead. Former Green Party presidential candidate Dr. Jill Stein was another speaker at the rally. Jill Stein called for slashing the Pentagon's enormous budget, arguing in her speech that even the $100 billion we are spending to support the war in Ukraine could help the nation solve a wide range of domestic issues. Jill Stein said, "This murderous military spending consumes resources desperately needed here at home by 70,000 people who die each year for lack of health insurance, for 500,000 homeless people on any given night out in the streets of America, for 33 million marred in student debt, 100 million in medical debt, and 22 million impoverished children, and so on and so forth." Former Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who fought for the Democratic nomination in 2004 and 2008, cited a bombshell report by Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist Seymour Hersh to demand accountability from the U.S. government. Dennis Kucinich said, "In blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline, this government has used illegal and unconstitutional means to destroy the energy resources needed to protect millions of people in Europe during winter, and then to profit from its illegal actions by selling energy to Europe at a 4 to 6 times markup." Dennis Kucinich pointed out that the White House's greatest talent is to craft misinformation and disinformation to subvert the media and misuse it as an instrument to incite fear and hatred among our people, exiting partisan divisions at home through cross-politics and stirring ancient hatred abroad through lies, deceit, false flag operations and provocations which profane the very essence of democracy. At one point, comedian and political commentator Jimmy Dore went on stage. Jimmy Dore asked the crowd why the United States was sending funds to aid the pro-Nazi Kiev government when people in the United States itself are in dire economic straits and needed money to purchase eggs or other basic items for their survival. Similar demonstrations were also held in Bath and Westbrook, Maine, to protest the billions of dollars the United States is spending to arm Ukraine. Peace groups and other organizations of the rallies also called for dismantling of the NATO alliance and to slash America's military budget. China's Xinhua news agency has also covered this issue and tells us more. Hundreds of protesters on Sunday afternoon, 19th of February, slammed America's role of war machine in overseas wars at a rally before the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. Organizers said the anti-war rally was planned to protest against massive money funneling into Ukraine, as well as America's role in the Russia-Ukraine conflict. A statement said billions of taxpayer dollars are being torched at the altar of U.S. hegemony, the military-industrial complex, and a corrupt Congress. Jimmy Dore, American political commentator and media personality, spoke at Sunday's rally, echoing that America is corrupt. Jimmy Dore said, "Do you know we could end this war today through diplomacy? But our politicians want to enrich weapons manufacturers, so they keep donating to them." Kat McGuire, a protester from New York City, told China's Xinhua news agency, "The overarching goal of this rally is to stop the war in Ukraine." Kat McGuire said, "People have to wake up. There's massive warmongering propaganda, and unfortunately, too many people have bought into it." Other speakers and protesters also lashed out at America's military-industrial complex, a powerful interest group made up of the military, private defense contractors, and politicians. The protesters then marched to the White House after the rally, chanting slogans like "No to NATO, No to War." Eric Reeves, a protester from Texas, said the military-industrial complex, which has a huge influence on Washington's decision-makers, is way out of control. He complained the U.S. government is not doing the will of the American people and making decisions without consulting us. U.S. President Joe Biden made an unannounced visit to Kiev on Monday, 20th of February, and pledged a military aid package worth $500 million, almost a year into the Russia-Ukraine conflict. The United States, by far the largest supplier of military assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the war, also announced an additional $500 million aid package, which will include more military equipment and more weapons, like the anti-tank Javelin missiles, for Kiev. During his visit, President Biden vowed that Washington would stand with Ukraine as long as it takes.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on the blessed month of Ramadan. 2011. Fasting is a divine gift that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has bestowed on believers. August 7th, 2011. The late Haj Mirza Jawad Agha Maliki Tabrizi, the famous Islamic mystic, says in his book Al-Muraqibat that fasting is a divine gift that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted, has bestowed on believers and his servants. He says, fasting is not an obligation. Rather, it is an honor for which we should be thankful to God. Fasting, which is the sign of God's respect for his servants, is something which we should appreciate and for which we should be thankful to God. He mentions many benefits for the thirst and hunger of the month of Ramadan, which believers consider themselves obligated to tolerate. He extracted these benefits from Islamic narrations, and the knowledge originated from the enlightened heart of this great man. Among the most important benefits is that this hunger and thirst give the heart a kind of purity which prepares the ground for thinking, and 1 hour of thinking is better than years of worship. The month of Ramadan enlightens and cleanses hearts and souls. September 20, 2009. Muslims finish the month of Ramadan with enlightenment. The month of Ramadan enlightens and cleanses hearts and souls by fasting, engaging in dhikr, dua, and divine prayers. By reciting the Holy Quran and engaging in many other virtues which religious people benefit from. In fact, from the night of Qadr onwards, the religious people who engage in fasting begin a new year. During the night of Qadr, their fate for the whole year is recorded by the divine angels who record our actions. During the night of Qadr, one enters a new year, a new stage, and in fact, a new life and birth. From this night onwards, one begins to take a path with his provisions of piety.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Ramadan is the month of penitence. August 18th, 2010. Among the characteristics that have been mentioned for the month of Ramadan, what particularly attracts my attention is the month of patience. I'd like to discuss this point with you, government officials. Penitence means going back when you realize that you are treading the wrong path, doing the wrong thing and cherishing the wrong thought. It means turning back to Allah the Exalted. This penitence has a meaning that is inherent to it. Going back means we should find out where the problem lies and identify the path that is wrong. This is a very important point. As we move along, we often tend to turn a blind eye to the mistakes we make and to our faults. We fail to notice the problems that plague our work. This happens in our individual responsibilities as well as our collective responsibilities involving our nation, our party, our movement, or our camp. We often ignore the problems with everything that is related to us. Therefore, other people should point out our flaws.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
A day after a surprise jump in inflation, an expected rise in the Bank of England's interest rate from 4% to 4.25, the 11th increase in less than 2 years.
The Bank of England argues the increase in the interest rate is aimed at reducing inflation. That's amongst the highest levels since 1982. On the other hand, there are some economists who are saying it'll inevitably increase the pressure on many Britons, already being squeezed by the cost of living crisis.
That's because a higher interest rate means a higher cost of borrowing.
It's going to affect people with mortgages, and it's going to affect companies with debt, and there's a lot of companies with a lot of debt.
Today's interest hike comes against the backdrop of this pledge by Prime Minister Rishi Sunak in January.
We will halve inflation this year to ease the cost of living and give people financial security.
That is yet to happen. Some economists say some of the inflation rise can be blamed on potentially one-off factors, such as vegetable shortages caused by extreme weather in Spain and North Africa, and British producers not producing for fear of massive energy bills. Others say there are other underlying reasons. The Bank of England was the first to increase interest rates, but not the only one. EU and US central banks have also raised borrowing costs, with the American Central Bank's chair, Jerome Powell, saying there was still a long way to go to tame inflation in the world's largest economy. While Britons continue to contend with the soaring cost of food and energy, would this be the last rate hike by the UK Central Bank? Syed Pourreza, London.
Turkey's pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party and its allies have announced that they will not field a candidate to run against President Erdogan on May 14. HDP co-chairwoman Pervin Buldan made the announcement in a presser for the Labour and Freedom Alliance, which includes the HDP, the Turkish Workers' Party and other leftist parties. Although it was not made clear during the conference, the announcement means the HDP will support the opposition National Alliance candidate Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu.
We will fulfill our historical responsibility against the one-man rule. We are determined to hold this government, which continues a rule based on poverty and corruption. The HDP and its allies will not nominate a candidate for May 14.
The announcement is considered a major setback for Turkish President Erdogan, as the HDP is the third largest party in parliament. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan slammed the opposition bloc's cooperation with the pro-PKK People's Democratic Party, saying alliances should focus on common principles rather than negotiations over seats.
The announcement by the Kurdish alliance that they will not nominate a candidate will make this election difficult for President Erdogan, which means that the Kurdish votes will go to Kılıçdaroğlu. Yesterday, we also heard President Erdogan say that 17 of his ministers and his deputy will run for parliamentary elections to strengthen his party's position in these elections. Erdogan knows his position is not the strongest after the Kurdish alliance announcement and is trying to fix things around him to make sure he wins.
On Tuesday, the day before the announcement, Kılıçdaroğlu met with HDP leadership in the parliament building in Ankara, during which he made promises to remove restrictions on the Kurdish language and address other related issues. The May 14 election looks to be a tough one for the ruling party and its allies. Many say Kurdish voters could play the role of a kingmaker and help the opposition win this time. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
The United Nations headquarters in Geneva once again played host to the annual Human Rights Council session on Monday, where the UN Special Rapporteur to Iran released a report on women's rights situation inside the Islamic Republic. Predictably, his views sparked major disputes with Iran's delegation over accusations of mistreatment of women in recent months following Western-backed anti-Iran riots.
Advocacy for human rights is increasingly mistaken by some states and human rights mandate holders for their unwarranted and egotistic purposes, abusing the human rights mechanisms to single out and target those nations with independent foreign policy is void of any added value for protection of human rights.
As the envoys battled it out, two Iranian onlookers had a very real story of abuse, which had been largely ignored until now. Manager Safiyari and Elham Jalizavi, two Iranian nationals who suffered horrifically following terrorist attacks on Iranian soil. The culprits, notorious anti-Iran terrorist group the MKO. an obscure cult organization which currently receives significant Western support and even maintains a presence at the UN itself via